Welcome to Off the Record with Paul Hodes here on WKXL AM and FM, streaming live over the internet, coming to you from our sumptuous studios high atop Concord's drizzly Main Street. We are brought to you by the Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community, designed specifically for those living with Alzheimer's, dementia, or other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour. Celebrate life at the Birches. Call 224-9111. And we are powered by Revision Energy. For the past 9 years, Revision's team of local solar professionals has been putting sunshine to work for thousands of Granite State families and businesses looking to save money and save the planet for our kids. For your free consultation, visit revisionenergy.com. That's revisionenergy.com, and see what sunshine can do for you. Well, the President of the United States is in the air, and on his behalf, I just want to say, fly me to the moon and let me play among the stars. Yes, Donald Trump has left the house. Donald Trump is in the air on his way to Asia for a 2-week swing while things at home are roiling fast and furious. There's been a lot of progress made in the past few days by Special Counsel Mueller on his Russia investigation. Various people, the chips are falling, as they say, where they may. And of course, Donald Trump suffered perhaps the worst indignity, the worst calamity, the worst tragedy of his presidential career so far. Nothing in all the months he's been in office could prepare him or his staff or his supporters for what happened with Donald Trump's Twitter account. Because just the other day, a disgruntled employee leaving Twitter shut down Donald Trump's Twitter account, @RealDonaldTrump, shut it down for all of 11 minutes, leaving millions of people who have nothing better to do with their time than to listen to Donald Trump's tweets without a minute-by-minute update of Donald Trump's absolute insanity in tweets. Because without his Twitter feed, how could Donald Trump distract us from what's really going on? How could he bother us about Hillary Clinton? And what is Trump's obsession with Hillary Clinton? She's not a candidate. She's not in office. She's written a book. She's basically disappeared. But he thinks that if he keeps calling for an investigation into Hillary Clinton by the Justice Department, and by the way, if he keeps on interviewing candidates for what is supposed to be the Independent Justice Department, maybe he can get somebody to launch yet another specious investigation of Hillary Clinton. For what purpose? We don't know, because those investigations don't go anywhere. There's nothing to investigate anymore, and all he's trying to do is distract from the investigation into what is now clearly at least attempted collusion by his campaign with the Russians in the 2016 election. But all that is left behind as Donald Trump has boarded Air Force One. He is in the air, and I'm not sure that Twitter works while his Twitter account works while he's flying around the world. I'm hoping against hope, for the sake of the country, for the sake of the world, for the sake of all of us who are trying to keep our sanity in a minute-by-minute 24-hour news cycle where the news falls fast and furious, that maybe his thumbs just won't work up there.
Well, I got some bad news for you then.
Oh, no, Chris. Ryan, are you telling me that his Twitter account is active from Air Force One, that in the air he can still tweetify us to death?
Deserter Bo Bergdahl, the sergeant who left his... or deserted essentially his group, was on trial, and the verdict came down in regards to that. Bergdahl was able to avoid jail time, was reduced from a sergeant to a private, and the president immediately tweeted this: "The decision on Sergeant Bergdahl is a complete and total disgrace to our country and to our military." So it seems that the president in being kind of confined to a corner, being placed in a corner by Robert Mueller, is looking to even further test the power of his presidency. And I think that should be concerning to everyone. We've seen, obviously, the attacks on the press, and now there appears to be, you know, clear attacks on the justice system. You mentioned the fact that, you know,
he called it a joke, by the way.
Right.
I mean, Donald Trump yesterday, I think it was, in a question and answer session at the White House, said that our justice system is a joke. And this, of course, coming from the president of the United States, is no joke, because our justice system is supposed to be an independent system. And in fact, the justice system is the system that is investigating wrongdoing by various people, including officials of the Trump campaign and perhaps Donald Trump himself. So interfering with the work of the Department of Justice is something that presidents, at least up to now, have studiously avoided.
Right, and I think we could have an in-depth conversation about some of the failings of the justice system, but the fact of the matter is that Donald Trump's reasoning for saying the justice system is a joke is because it's not doing what he wants it to do, which is exactly what it's supposed to do. That is the reason that Donald Trump is frustrated with the justice system in our country. He wanted there to be certain things that happened after the New York terror attack, which to me was another blindly reckless thing in order to try to divert from what's going on with the Russian investigation. I mean, regardless of how you feel about the individual who allegedly perpetrated these crimes, there still is a rule of law in our country. And you know, Donald Trump doesn't have all the facts of this case. And in the past, he has said that he needed to have all the facts and situations in order to make determinations. Donald Trump doesn't know what happened here, and is saying that individuals should have the death penalty, and calling the Justice Department a joke. We are a nation of laws, and you know, regardless of whether or not this individual, the percentages are obviously very, very, very high that he committed this crime. But the president is not supposed to be administering justice via tweet. And this is just another area in which he is testing his boundaries. And you mentioned before, you know, interviewing individuals who could play a role as lead prosecutors.
U.S. attorneys that is very in New York and D.C.
Right. That is very concerning, because he wants these individuals to administer his justice, and the justice as he sees it, not justice according to the Constitution, the rule of law, or anything else. He wants them to administer justice as Donald Trump sees fit, who does not have any education, training, or background on these issues, other than being sued a lot.
What distinguishes this country, among other things, but what distinguishes this country and has distinguished this country is that we are a government of laws, not of men. And Donald Trump is undermining that with every tweet, at every chance he gets. We are not ruled by a king. We are not ruled by a dictator. And Donald Trump should keep his mouth shut about the justice system. This is Paul Hodes, Off the Record with Paul Hodes on WKXL AM and FM, brought to you by the Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community, designed specifically for those living with Alzheimer's, dementia, or other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour. Celebrate life at the Birches. Call 224-9111, and we're powered by Revision Energy. For the past 9 years, Revision's team of local solar professionals has been putting sunshine to work for thousands of Granite State families and businesses looking to save money and save the planet for our kids. For a free consultation, visit revisionenergy.com. That's revisionenergy.com. Find out what sunshine can do for you. We'll be back after this to talk with Ray Buckley, chair of the New Hampshire Democratic Committee. Welcome back to Off the Record with Paul Hodes here on WKXL AM and FM, streaming live over the internet. coming to you from our cloudy studios high atop Concord's burgeoning Main Street, where throngs of people are walking up and down. We are brought to you by the Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community designed specifically for those living with Alzheimer's, dementia, or other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour. Celebrate life at the Birches. Call 224-9111. And we're powered by Revision Energy. For the past 9 years, Revision's team of local solar professionals has been putting sunshine to work for thousands of Granite State families and businesses looking to save money and save the planet for our kids. For your free consultation, visit revisionenergy.com. That's revisionenergy.com, and find out what sunshine can do for you. Well, we could use a little sunshine today. It's been rainy on this day, but we are very happy to welcome to Off the Record Chairman Ray Buckley, the chairman of the New Hampshire Democratic Party. Ray Buckley has had too many lifetimes in politics for me to count. He has served in office. He's been the Democratic chair here for a number of years and led local Democrats to numbers of victories. And he's also served as the chair of the Association of all the state chairs. He served on the Executive Committee and Rules Committee at the Democratic National Committee, which has been somewhat in the news of late. But before we get to the big topic of the recent stuff about the Democratic National Committee, Ray, welcome to Off the Record.
Thanks for having me.
So you served for many years on the Executive Committee and the Rules Committee. You're currently back on the Executive Committee. But there's been some shakeup at the DNC that I wanted to talk a little bit about. As we know, in 2016, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, a sitting congresswoman, was chair of the DNC, the Democratic National Committee. I knew Debbie well. She was actually instrumental in helping get me elected to Congress. She was a fiery congresswoman from Florida who was adept at raising money, adept at politics, and really made it her business to help shepherd young members of Congress. And by young, I will mean those who recently arrived. She was a sort of mother hen to a whole group of us in 2006 when we arrived, and you may recall, Ray, that it was at a fundraiser up here in 2006 that I first met her when she came and heard me speak at an event and apparently took the message back that we might have a live one, we might have a breathing candidate in New Hampshire on the Democratic side, which at the time was a relative rarity in the 2nd District. Dick Swett had held the seat for a while, but there had been a real lapse of Democratic candidates, and she was a big help to me. Now, I say that because I saw Debbie Wasserman Schultz as one of the hardest working people in show business. There was nobody in Congress who outworked her. And it was really a hallmark of her tenure in Congress. When she was elevated to the head of the DNC, I frankly saw that as a good thing. I thought you had a good practicing member of Congress who really understood politics and that she would do a good job. Some controversy developed, which we'll get into a little bit later, but ultimately, after the recent elections, Tom Perez, Secretary of Labor, who I don't believe has ever held elected office, came in a contested election. You ran for chair of the DNC. What was behind your decision to run for the chair of the DNC?
Well, really twofold. First, I saw what we were able to do on the ground here in New Hampshire in 2014 and 2016. New Hampshire led the nation in increased Democratic turnout compared 2014 to 2010 and 2012 to 2008. And we did it with a real old-fashioned neighbor-to-neighbor program. We saw what happened in 2010. We vowed that was not going to happen again.
I saw what happened in 2010.
And so we rolled up our sleeves and got into the weeds of the state. And we have among the highest percentage of local active committees in the country per capita. And we were able to track that it had everything to do with actual neighbors talking to neighbors. So I wanted to bring that message. I was alarmed that the folks that were talking about running for DNC chair had not had any party experience. They all had some sort of governmental, either as an elected official or appointed official, but hadn't really been on the ground winning elections. And then there were some of my colleagues who also, they had party experience, but not on the ground winning elections either. And so I just thought that bringing the message of the success that we do here in New Hampshire would shift the argument. I also strongly believe that the Democratic Party bungled the 2016 nominating process, which caused for unlimited thousands of individuals to either decide not to support our nominee or decide not to be helpful to our campaign effort. We did not address it strongly enough and quickly enough, and I wanted to make sure that they heard that somebody cared about reforming the superdelegates, that somebody cared about transparency and respect of the membership from top to bottom. That's really what I tried to bring forward. We came up short, after I teamed up with Keith Ellison. We came up 14 votes short. We're still pushing forward and trying our best.
Keith Ellison, for those of you who are listening, is a Democratic congressman from Minnesota. He's a Muslim, a practicing Muslim. He is the only, I believe, Muslim, practicing Muslim in the United States Congress. He was an attorney. He's a terrific guy, and he was chair of the Progressive Caucus in the House. When you teamed up with Congressman Ellison, did you have concern that you would be labeled or fall into one box or the other? I mean, because the Democratic Party traditionally has cast a pretty broad net. We can talk about whether or not it's shrinking or expanding or where it's going, but certainly traditionally the Democratic coalition has been covered a wide scope on the political spectrum. It has from the far left, from various interest groups, whether it's minority interest groups or women or other interest groups, and then in political terms, certainly when I was in Congress, there were a number of blue dog Democrats, now replaced by Tea Partiers, who were frankly conservative Democrats. So you have this broad scope. But in the 2016 election, there seemed to be, as we know, this internecine warfare and a real clash between what you might call the progressive wing and what you might call the establishment wing. Keith Ellison is certainly somebody who has been identified with the progressive wing of the party. Were you concerned that you might be tagged with a label that, at least from my standpoint, looking at your career and the way you've conducted yourself with what I know to be at determined independence, frankly? Whenever a primary has come, you have been a neutral, you have been a fair arbiter, and while your politics could be classified one way or another, in a race like that, I think there might have been dangers for you in teaming up with a guy like Keith Ellison.
Well, when I decided to join, he did have an enormous amount of enthusiasm from organized labor, from Bernie supporters, and from a number of progressive leaders across the country. And some of them, some of the undecided members were concerned that without somebody who had had a long-term relationship with the party, and certainly I have. I've been a member of the Democratic National Committee since 1999. I had been on the Executive Committee since 2001. You know, I'd been the executive director of the state party back in the early 90s for 4 years. And so certainly I would be considered as part of the establishment wing. Certainly I knew where, the interactions, the governance of the DNC, what needed to be reformed. And I felt that my message of reforming the DNC and that my very detailed, clear plans about that might have been too detailed. people might not have been able to really, I think, of recent, they're starting to pick on some of the themes on why I was talking about certain issues so strongly. But I thought that it would give some comfort to those who liked the idea of healing the wounds of 2016, but were anxious about the lack of experience of that wing of the party in administering the party. And that's really what my role was going to be if he was chair. I think that he's a dynamic speaker. He would have been a great spokesperson, and I think he can rally and motivate people that is legendary. And to have that as a chair that's out there doing the interviews and raising the money and just talking to folks and really inspiring people, and then have me just in the office rolling up the seams and making sure everything works, I thought that was a good team.
Well, I remember when you announced your candidacy, which it was a candidacy that I strongly supported every way I could, not that I had any voice other than voicing support for you. I recognized that there was it was a very interesting race given the numbers of people there and the results of 2016 and what that meant for a party which really needed some house cleaning. Anytime a party suffers a loss of a president like the one we suffered as Democrats, you really got to take a look at what needs to be changed. Detailed plans are always a challenge. You remember in the debates, Hillary kept saying, "Well, I have plans. Go to my website," and that didn't do her too much good up against the Carrot Top Cantaloupe, who kept claiming we're just going to make America great again without saying anything about it. So I get plans. What was the campaigning like? What did you have to do in terms of making your pitch?
Well, it certainly was unusual. Nobody who had ever run for DNC chair before had ever spent even $500,000, and three of the candidates raised over $1 million. That was impossible for me. I ended up maybe raising around.
We're in New Hampshire.
Yeah, I ended up raising probably $130,000, $140,000. But it was part of the issue for me fundraising is that I would talk to people that were longtime donors, and they were like, "No, we want you to stay in New Hampshire, so we're not giving you a dime." So that was
thanks a lot for your love and support.
Exactly. But the money, the amount of staff that people hired, the cost of the travel was immense. We had 12 different debates, all of which were televised.
Right.
That had never happened before. The most we'd ever had for debates was in 2005, and there were just four. So the debates were weekly, or more than weekly in some instances. I also learned a lot of things about national media that I did not know. That in order to get booked on MSNBC or CNN, you have to have a professional booker, and they cost anywhere between $12,000 to $20,000 a month. So that's why I never appeared on CNN or MSNBC. I just, I would have liked to, but the expense to me just was not what I thought that was the most effective use. But being able to talk to the people, and having the ability to talk about our story here in New Hampshire. And what is amazing is if you play back the first forum and then play back the last forum, how everyone's message slowly shifted to my message. And so the amount of support that... So here, we've elected Tom Perez. who had never been member of a town committee, county committee, state committee, national committee, had no history of being involved in the party. But through the course of the chair's race, he has created a 50-state strategy that is like Howard Dean's on steroids. And so I feel very happy and pleased with that, that I think that I helped direct that conversation into supporting the grassroots.
We're going to take a short break. It's Off the Record with Paul Hodes here on WKXL AM and FM. We're speaking with Ray Buckley, chair of the New Hampshire Democratic Party. We are brought to you by the Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community designed specifically for those living with Alzheimer's, dementia, or other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour, celebrate life at the Birches, and call 224-9111. We're powered by Revision Energy. For the past 9 years, Revision's team of local solar professionals has been putting sunshine to work for thousands of Granite State families and businesses looking to save money and save the planet for our kids. For your free consultation, visit revisionenergy.com. That's revisionenergy.com and find out what sunshine can do for you. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more with Ray Buckley here on Off the Record. We're back. It's Off the Record with Paul Hodes here on WKXL AM and FM, streaming live over the internet and archived at ConcordNewsRadio.com. We're brought to you by the Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community designed specifically for those living with Alzheimer's, dementia, or other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour, celebrate life at the Birches, and call 224-9111. We are proudly powered by Revision Energy. For the past 9 years, Revision's team of local solar professionals has been putting sunshine to work for thousands of Granite State families and businesses looking to save money and save the planet for our kids. For your free consultation, visit revisionenergy.com. That's revisionenergy.com and find out what sunshine can do for you. Well, we're talking with Ray Buckley, chair of the New Hampshire Democratic Party, about doings at the DNC. And of course, Ray ran for the chairmanship and then hitched his wagon to with Keith Ellison, running as a tag team duo in worldwide wrestling. But it was not to be. And Ray, thankfully for those of us in New Hampshire, is in New Hampshire running the New Hampshire Democratic Party, where we've had a string of Democratic victories in special elections. But down in Washington, things are in a bit of turmoil. Tom Perez, who is was elected chair, made some moves recently, Ray. A couple of weeks ago, we read in the press that you had been removed from the executive committee and the rules committee. Some other New Hampshire people were put on those committees, but it was quite a shock to those of us who follow politics, even tangentially, given your sterling record, your years of service, your deep knowledge of grassroots politics and how to win elections, something that Democrats nationally are sorely in need of. And I know you're smiling kind of a wry smile about it, but what happened? Remember, we're off the record here. Totally off the record.
Well, nobody's told me exactly what happened. But my experience through my decades in politics is that when I run a contested race, that I immediately reach out to my opponent and their supporters and immediately give them tasks and engage them and involve them. And if they were serious about being involved in whatever whatever organization, then they suddenly become friends and I forget even that they didn't support, and other people just fade away. But it's always because they decided it wasn't for them, not because I cast them out. It is a unusual thing that because I ran and supported Keith, and you know, maybe it's because my endorsement was in the final 2 weeks and might have given Tom a scare. I don't know. I have not spoken to Tom since the election in February, and I don't really have a relationship with his staff. I was very surprised. I know there was an enormous amount of people that were contacting him about my staying on the Rules Committee. So that did come as a surprise. But as you mentioned, Kathy Sullivan was returned to the Rules Committee. Kathy voted for Tom in February. So I don't begrudge her. She supported the winner. And there you go. I think it would have been better if months ago somebody had given me a heads up so I didn't sort of embarrass myself by going out there and asking everyone to send him letters to keep me on the committee and then have a staffer, you know, call me at 11 o'clock at night and leave a message on my voicemail that I was not reappointed. But anyway.
I mean, that, you know, look, I mean, let's face it. That's kind of like having FBI agents raid Manafort's house in the middle of the night. It's just, it's not fun. It's not nice. That doesn't strike me as kind of elemental politeness or good politics. I mean, I can say it. You may not be able to say it, but it just doesn't strike me as a smart move for the chair of the Democratic National Committee, faced with the kind of conflict that we are unfortunately experiencing in politics today and in the Democratic superstructure down in Washington, to conduct the affairs of the committee in an impolite and rude way. So I can't apologize for him, but that's not the way it ought to happen. You'd been on that. You had served, as you said, since 2001. That is more than 15 years of service. And it strikes me that the Democratic National Committee needs you more than ever, given what happened. Now, you got back on the executive committee.
I did.
How did that happen?
Well, each of the regional caucuses are able to elect two male and two female members of the caucus, and so I ran for one of the two seats. Despite the best efforts of some of Tom's friends when they were pulling folks out of the caucus to talk to them in the hallway, I had the biggest landslide I have ever heard of. I won by 3/4 of 1 vote. Not 3/4 of the vote, 3/4 of one vote. I did not even win by a single full vote. It was because Democrats abroad all each have quarter votes. And so that was divided up. So I actually was victorious with 3/4 of a vote.
Well, that is a major landslide, the kind of mandate that any candidate can celebrate. But, you know, moving on from the that, I mean, that seemed to me to demonstrate dysfunction. But the dysfunction that process demonstrated, and it was widely reported in the national press, and people scratching their heads. But, you know, in the end, people said, okay, it's politics. To the victor go the spoils, and the victor is spoiling the victory. But be that as it may, what we've now got in the DNC this week is a show that there are words I can't use on the radio. I mean, the former acting chair, Donna Brazile, and I think I have her title right, has written a book. And in the book, she apparently has detailed relationships between the Democratic National Committee and the campaign of the Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton. And what the news has reported it as, what the Carrot Top Cantaloupe president has tweeted as, what Senator Elizabeth Warren has pegged this as, is that Hillary Clinton rigged the election with the Democratic National Committee by funding the Democratic National Committee and thereby exercising control, rigging the election in her favor over Bernie Sanders. I don't think that's true. And Brazil has tried to walk it back, saying, I never said that the election was rigged for Hillary Clinton. I didn't say that. The pundits are all saying, well, you didn't use those words, but you might as well have, in the way you describe the kind of control that the Clinton campaign exercised over the DNC even before she was chosen as the candidate. Thus, we think it looks like Clinton and the DNC conspired to rig it against Bernie. What's the truth?
The truth is that when Debbie Wasserman Schultz resigned the week of the National Convention, at the time, Donna Brazile was the senior vice chair of the DNC, and she was the interim or acting chair of the DNC. She left Philadelphia, went to the DNC building. Because of my service as a vice chair, I was then elevated to being the first vice chair. So she and I had a conversation, I believe, every single day. I don't recall a time where we didn't talk at some point, either at night or during the day, from the moment of the convention through the general election. She uncovered while, as she was trying to piece everything together of what exactly went wrong at the DNC, because she had made a pledge to Bernie and his supporters that she would do that. What she uncovered and was something that, as officers of the DNC, we should have known about. We should have been informed of, but we were not. There was a signed document between the DNC and Hillary's campaign that essentially gave the keys to the DNC to Hillary's campaign in August of 2015. I don't begrudge Hillary's campaign for taking advantage of that. That's what their job is, to win the election. The issue is not Hillary. The issue is that Debbie Wasserman Schultz and her senior staff even contemplated or came up with or agreed to this. That is when I was running for chair of the DNC. I said never again should the DNC ever get involved in a joint fundraising agreement between anyone in a contested presidential primary or any other primary. I believed that we had to reform our system, whether it's how the debates were scheduled, so it wasn't simply the chair, it was the executive committee setting the schedule. The executive committee and the officers were informed on contracts and hirings of senior staffers that we needed to democratize. And that's why I said, when I talked about getting into the weeds, I mean, what I was really saying is, here's what happened, folks, without saying it. Now, I was as shocked as anyone yesterday morning to wake up to see that Donna had put this out. The day that she informed us, she also called Bernie Sanders first before she even talked to the other officers. So Bernie's been aware of this since early last fall as well. And nobody wanted to blow up the general election and cause for Donald Trump's election, Bernie or any of the other officers, as we discovered this. And at this point, we're still trying to win elections, municipal elections and gubernatorial elections around the country. And we've got that U.S. Senate special election in Alabama. So everyone's focus was on that. But there was a commitment that never again. Obviously, when in the book, it says that she briefed the officers there. I had to, come out and say, yes, indeed, I did know this. And Bernie was also aware of this as well. But we were all horrified by it, shocked by it, and determined that never again.
It presents a real challenge for Democrats, because the internecine warfare, as I call it, between the progressive wing and the establishment wing is certainly still alive. I mean, if you take a look at Facebook, I'm presuming that the kinds of comments that I see on Facebook in terms of my feed here in New Hampshire are representative of the many people who supported Bernie in the primary. Of course, Bernie Sanders clobbered Hillary in the New Hampshire primary for president, although Hillary Clinton went on to win that primary election. But these revelations, I think, make Tom Perez's job really challenging right now. And I don't know what you've heard, but so far I've heard nothing but radio silence from Tom Perez about this. I haven't heard anything from Debbie Wasserman Schultz about this, and she probably just wants to fade away into the woodwork and hope that people do not remember how this was done. I mean, I knew that Debbie was a very strong Hillary Clinton supporter. I never would have imagined a secret side agreement over something like this when it's important to the democratic process that you can complain about Bernie not being an independent, not being truly a Democrat. He was running as Democrat. We needed a fair and open and democratic primary process to ensure elemental fairness. But Tom Perez has been awfully silent about it, and I think this makes his job much more complicated in terms of healing the national wounds that Democrats are struggling with.
You know, I agree. This is certainly a challenge. And I think that what we need to do is come clean, be honest, and bring everyone together. You know, I've had some conversations the last 24 hours, obviously, with other state party chairs and other national party leaders, and that's what we're determined to do. But right now I'm focused on Joyce Craig's mayor's election in Manchester and the other elections that we have all across the country, the state.
We're going to bring you back after some of those elections, Ray. We've been talking with Ray Buckley here on Off the Record. Thanks for coming in. We're brought to you by the Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community designed specifically for those living with Alzheimer's and other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour. Celebrate life at the Birches. Call 224-9111. Don't go away. We'll be back to wrap up this edition of Off the Record with Paul Hodes. Welcome back. It's Off the Record with Paul Hodes here on WKXL AM and FM, streaming live over the internet. And you can find our shows archived at ConcordNewsRadio.com. We're brought to you by the Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community. For those living with Alzheimer's, dementia, or other forms of memory impairment, join a tour. Celebrate life at the Birches. Call 224-9111. And we're powered by Revision Energy. For the past 9 years, Revision's team of local solar professionals has been putting sunshine to work for thousands of Granite State families and businesses looking to save money and save the planet for our kids. Visit revisionenergy.com for a free consultation. That's revisionenergy.com, and find out what sunshine can do for you. Well, Chris Ryan and I teed off on President Donald Trump, who's interfering with the rule of law with his tweets, trying to gain control, it appears, of the Department of Justice, mouthing off about the terror attack in New York and what ought to happen with that suspect. Interfering there means that it may be hard for this guy to get a fair trial, and he gets a fair trial because it's America. And then mouthing off about what ought to happen with Bo Bergdahl, or what did happen with Bo Bergdahl, he got a fair trial and Trump didn't like what happened to him, so he's mouthing off there. And we talked with Ray Buckley about the ups and downs of the Democratic National Committee. A hand grenade has been rolled in to that committee, and it's exploding with a stink bomb. This is Off the Record with Paul Hodes on WKXL AM and FM, streaming live over the internet, brought to you by the Birches at Concord and Revision Energy. Thanks to our sponsors. Thanks to our listeners. We'll be back next week with more Off the Record with Paul Hodes.
Set blue from the distance. The carnival rides sent their souls to me. The bandstand rocked on with a vengeance. And teenagers learn to be free. Oh, those times I would see them in my mind as I walk along this lonely beach. Oh, those times I would see them in my mind. I hold them within my reach. Penny arcade sat on the side. Smell floating down the alley. Crescent Beach. All those times I would see them in my mind as I walk along this lonely beach. All those times I would see them in my mind. I child's first taste, living grace.